Let's be honest. How many times have you chalked up a relationship ending to bad timing? For hosts Nancy and PJ Heslin, the answer is a lot. It took living separately in Canada, the US, and France, two divorces, and 20 years for timing to work out. And when it finally did in the south of France, the couple discovered they had two different versions of their love story. We all do, right? But what if your side is not the whole story and you have the journals to prove it? Keep listening to Nancy and PJ Finally Get Together, a podcast on love, relationships, and two lives in between.
Hey, podcast listeners, it's PJ from Nancy and PJ Finally Get Together. I remember hearing my first podcast 15 years ago. It was an episode of This American Life on iTunes, and I couldn't believe what a great way this was to access stories. These days, I subscribe to all my favorite shows like Aya Dude, WTF with Marc Maron, and My Favorite Murder using the Apple Podcast app. It's a convenient way to listen and stay up to date with the latest episodes. So if you don't want to miss out on Nancy and PJ Finally Get Together, download the Apple Podcast app and subscribe to our show. Thanks again for listening.
Welcome to Nancy and PJ Finally Get Together. I'm Nancy Heslin.
And I'm PJ Heslin.
PJ, episode 34. Have your emotions ever got the best of you?
You know my rule about emotions, Nancy. There are two times when a man of my age and generation should cry.
Oh, I didn't think there'd be any. Okay, let's hear it.
No, there are two exceptions.
Okay.
At the end of the movie Old Yeller.
Okay.
And also at the end of the movie Brian's Song. Those are two references that
How
if you're...
How old are you?
From the age of 50 to 70, you'll get. Otherwise, you don't know what I'm talking about.
Okay, I have not watched either, PJ, so...
You've never seen the movie Old Yeller? You've never even heard about it?
I think I've heard of it, but I don't think I've ever seen it. Maybe I did as a kid. But
yeah, it's a Disney... I think it's a Disney movie about a boy who adopts a golden retriever named Old Yeller.
And PJ, then you could never watch a movie
like
that.
Doesn't have a happy ending for Old Yeller. You can guess what happens.
Oh, I guess because it's old.
Yes.
Start with.
Brian's Song, made-for-TV movie with James Caan, and his... football movie, and his buddy dies at the end.
Oh, PJ.
His football buddy dies at the end.
Yeah, okay. Let's move on to something a little bit happier.
That's why you're allowed to cry at those movies. And no other occasion.
Well, I think when you read my diary entry, you may find that your emotions actually did get the best of you just once back in 1990.
I'm not looking forward to this.
All right. This will be good. This will be good for me. But also, very positive news. Thank you to everybody who has reached out to check in to see how I'm doing. We got the news from my second biopsy. And no more cancer cells have been found, so I have been given a clean bill of health.
And tell everybody my favorite part, when the doctor got you in trouble.
Oh, your favorite bedtime story now, PJ?
You got in trouble.
So since the last episode, I have been to the hospital more than a handful of times. I ended up, the day we recorded the last one, I had an infection, ended up in ER.
Wait a minute. It just wasn't an infection. It was a horrible infection.
It was pretty gross.
I mean, it was when I looked at it, it was an appetite suppressing type of infection.
Even for you?
Yeah. Oh, I was just like, I didn't want to look at it. No.
Well, I guess I should say I was actually allergic to the stitches. So my body was rejecting the stitches. And also it turned out I had an allergic reaction to the antiseptic. And then I was also allergic to the adhesive on the Band-Aids and all the creams they tried to put on. So it was just getting worse and worse, and they ended up having to take the stitches out early. And for me, I mean, I was getting amazing care, right, PJ? I mean,
oh, yeah.
Like, I couldn't get better. But all I could think about was, well, when do I get to start doing sports? Because after 2 weeks, I was fine. I was, you know, I think even last episode, I used the word, I'm so proud of myself. Well, I'm not proud of myself now, because I pushed that subject so much with my surgeon. And, you know, my arm was still open and I kept going, can I do sports now? Can I run now? And finally it got to a point where she said, okay, look, you can run, but gently. Like, you still have to have everything like bandaged up and everything, but just like gently. So I went back 2 days later and she looks at it and it was getting better. And I said, so can I do sports now? And she laid into me.
And Nancy's not used to people laying into her.
The doctor just said to me, do you realize that you've had cancer? Cancer. She's like, do you understand what cancer is? You are lucky that we did not find any in the second biopsy. You are lucky that there was no cancer in your lymph nodes. Do you understand that a cancer cell is a cancer cell? And I was just looking at her and I went to interrupt her and she's like, I am not finished talking yet. I was like, uh-oh.
And she's my hero.
She really dressed me down, and rightfully so. You know, she just said, do you think you're the first person that's done sports, that can't do sports? Your body needs to heal because you've had cancer.
And you should add that she wasn't being a jerk. Nope. She was being a doctor. She was trying to get you to realize that you've just gone through something very serious. And
yeah, but PJ, you know, I think the problem was you and I were both treating it like a sports injury.
Absolutely. Like it's, you know, we said before, there's sort of a urban misconception about skin cancer of it's not that serious. So if you get it cut early and it's not affecting you, you get it cut out, hey, you're off, you're good, do whatever you want to do. But as the doctor said, cancer's cancer. It doesn't matter if it's skin, liver, brain, it's cancer.
Yeah. No, I mean, she was right. And, you know, my issue, and maybe this is just me, but I don't think so. I'm sure people out there, if you do sports especially, I have a big competition coming up in Dunkirk, France at the end of May. And it's the French Rowing Championships, open water. And I have this dream of rowing in Dunkirk. And it's not that I want to row today. I just wanted the doctor to tell me at what point I could row. And then I can commit to the coach and to my team. And that's really what she just turned around to me and said, your health is way more important than a rowing championship. And I said, yeah, but I also have my mental health. And she said, you don't have mental health if you don't have your health, right?
Yeah, if you're dead, it's hard to be happy.
So it was really difficult to take in because she just kept, as I said, repeating the word cancer, cancer, cancer. And so it has completely changed the way I'm healing now. And in the last 12 weeks, I've had 14 doctor's appointments. I've had 2 surgeries, a lymph node ultrasound. I've been to the ER. And I'm just so grateful at everybody at the Princess Grace Hospital Center for all of their care, the doctors, the nurses, you know, people working admissions, right, PJ? I mean, how lucky am I?
And what was the cost?
I have had one bill sent to me for €6.90 from emergency, and I get that reimbursed.
$6.90, Americans. That's what universal healthcare costs you for 14 visits to the hospital.
Well, let's be honest. If I had had to, when that infection happened, if I knew I had to pay out of pocket like a huge amount of money, I don't think I would have gone and realized that I was allergic to the stitches.
Absolutely.
One of the things that really I found amazing also about my experience at the hospital was over the last few weeks, 2 people who don't know who I am, like we're just chit-chatting, told me how much they love working at that hospital and how proud they are to work for their boss. And their boss is a woman. She is Benoit Rousseau de Sévelines. She was appointed 6 years ago to be director of the Monaco Hospital at the age of 36, which, if you know France or Monaco, like it's a very macho culture here. Can you believe that, PJ?
Very impressive, as you said, France, but especially Monaco, very, very paternalistic. For a woman to be head of anything in Monaco is impressive, but especially at that age, that she is very good at her job then.
Yeah, and I thought it was pretty cool that people would feel proud to be a part of something like that. And as somebody that is a strong advocate of supporting women, I would like to just take this opportunity also to make a big announcement that with my very good friend, Lacey DaCosta, we have launched Monaco's first English language publishing house called Carob Tree Publishing. Just gonna let that go on a little longer. I'm really, really proud. We have decided to have a Maison d'édition that will support women authors and women-focused projects. And everything is about inspiration and positive stories connected to Monaco. And our first book is coming out. It will be a charity book.
Big money maker, the first one, charity book.
Not sure about our business plan, but it's the reason actually why we set up the company was because we wanted to get involved in a project. But today is April 23rd, and we've chosen this day to officially launch Carob Tree Publishing because
it's close to my birthday.
It's World Book Day today. And my partner, Lacey, is an avid reader, and I am an avid storyteller, and hopefully together we are going to create something amazing and PJ, I'm excited, I'm proud, and I'm scared. And I am also really grateful because you encouraged me really to take a leap of faith and be my own boss.
It's only because I'm hoping for an early retirement when the publishing company takes off.
You heard that my first book is a charity book, right?
Damn.
Not for profit.
Damn, I'm working till I'm 80.
I think you might be. But that's the other thing. Like, you've always been an avid reader, right? Your whole life. Like,
yeah,
you always have your nose in a book because when you're not watching that woman chopping wood.
Yeah, if I'm not watching YouTube clips of Canadian female lumberjacks and adventures gone wrong. Yeah, I love reading, especially as a kid. loved, got hooked on reading with the Narnia series, which I'm sure I'm not the only kid that got hooked on reading with that. Yeah, Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. Only book I've ever reread. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Really? Yep. The only book you've ever read?
Only book
I've ever read. Well, wait till you read some of Carob Tree's books. You'll probably be, that's so good, I want to read it again.
And then, one of the reasons I took history was because you had to read. I loved just reading true stories that actually happened in history. That's gotten me onto a lifelong obsession, I would say, with nonfiction. And most recently, one of the greatest books I've ever read in a long time, a book called The Car.
I gave that to you because I read it. I used to get a subscription to The Week magazine, which was like my favorite read in the world. And it always had some great recommendations for books. And you loved that book.
Oh, loved it. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to talk about my theories of the car because I sound like a crazy guy.
We're not going to have any rants about people getting hit by cars in the street.
Well aware of my theories in the car. But anyway, the great book about the car, all about the marketing in the car that's gone into it, why it's become a staple of not just America, but of kind of the Western world. Awesome book. And then most recently, a book I loved about one of my idols, Steve Martin's autobiography, Born Standing Up.
I didn't know that Steve Martin was one of your idols until you were watching him. I saw that show you watched this week. What was that on, Apple?
Apple TV, yeah. I watched the two-part documentary on his life. Awesome. Really, really good documentary.
Was that based on the book?
There is, yeah, he talks a lot about his stand-up, but there's a lot more information in that documentary that wasn't in the book. The book's primarily about stand-up and his love of stand-up and the art and the craft of stand-up, which as a former stand-up, I found fascinating. But the documentary had a lot more information sort of about his personal life in particular, talking about his relationship with his dad.
Ooh. Were his parents divorced?
Parents stay together, but his dad, much like a lot of the dads of that generation, very cold, non-affectionate guy, didn't show him, you know, he, at one point he says, I don't ever recall my dad saying that he loved us or that he never recall being hugged by his dad.
Yeah, but isn't that just that generation? Like men that were born in the 40s, like they're not like today?
Yeah, definitely. It wasn't a rare thing back then that dudes didn't hug their kids.
Is that why he did stand up? Like it was a different way to get approval?
No, I don't think so. It was for him, it sort of seemed to be a love of performing that he found at a very young age.
You know, I've never really asked you this, but your dad left when you were how old?
Oh, we're going to get cats in the cradle here, aren't we?
No, but if you're saying that you guys have if you and Steve Martin have similar relationships with your dad, I'd kind of like to understand that. Because you're saying his parents didn't divorce, so I mean, I can understand in your situation because your dad wasn't around that maybe you didn't get some of the support or approval because he wasn't physically there.
Well, he left when I was 15. And when I say left, it's not like, you know, people say, oh yeah, my dad left and my parents. No, my dad left. Like there was no child support. There was really no visiting.
You didn't see him after he left?
We did a little bit.
Wait a second. My parents were married for an eternity and had a really happy marriage. Mm-hmm. If I'm asking an inappropriate question, then just tell me. But when people say the day like their dad left, it could be the mom, but in your case, the day your dad left, do you know, like, do you actually remember like your dad physically leaving the house or it's just like a kind of from that moment on?
I don't remember him physically leaving, but I remember he gathered us all in the living room. And I don't know why I'm laughing about it. I guess because it was so formal. Like,
why are we laughing?
I know. He gathered us all in the living room. But at that point, my brothers had moved out, so I was the only boy in the house. So my dad literally said to me at the age of, I was like 14 or 15. He was like, "Okay, so you're the man of the house now."
No.
And he didn't say it jokingly. Like he was like serious. And in my head, I was like, do I got to get a briefcase and a job? Like, Jesus, I'm 14. I don't know what to do. But I did. I took it very seriously, very, very much to heart.
Well, you had four sisters at the time.
Yes. And to this day, I'm still very protective over my sweet baby angel sisters. Yeah.
And then he just left? Like, he's like, you're the man of the house. And he just like walked out the door?
Yeah. Then he got his own place. And then he was visiting us for a while. It would be kind of sporadic on the weekend every now and then. But even then, like, he'd show up and he started dating and he'd bring these women that he was dating to his visitations. So it's like, It's like five kids and this strange lady that we don't know. And she's looking at us like, this is kind of uncomfortable. And we're all looking at her like, this is kind of uncomfortable.
Wait. You're telling me that your dad would go on a date and the date,
yes,
like, you'd never like met this person? So what? I have so many questions, PJ. What like would be a date? Like, what do you do when you have like five kids and a date? Did you go for like hamburgers or something?
Yeah, it'd be something like that. Like, I remember vividly one time we went on a hike somewhere in the countryside, and this poor woman is just like, okay, what do I say to these teenage kids that I don't know, and I've never had kids.
Would they try to talk to you guys?
Like, yeah, they always seem very sweet. Some very sweet ladies.
That is so weird, right?
Yeah, it was. I just always felt sorry for them. Even at the age of 15, I was like, this can't be a fun date. Even though I'm not dating, I know this wouldn't be fun.
But like, did he just kind of show up, or he had like certain times he had to come and spend time with you and your sisters?
I don't remember. It certainly wasn't court mandated or anything like that, but it would be the weekends. Like he'd say, okay, Saturday, I'm coming by. And, you know, and I remember even at one point, it was near the end of sort of these visitations before he left the country. And that's another story that I remember even taking him aside. And God, what was I thinking? I was like 15. And I said to him, I was like, Dad, like, I mean, this is supposed to be like our time and your time. And there's this stranger here. And it's like, we're not angry at her or you, but like, can you understand how awkward it is for everybody involved except you that you're trying to fit a date in with your child visitation? And I literally had that conversation with him. I was the adult at 15 trying to explain to my adolescent brain father, don't take dates on visitation with five of your teenage kids. It's not a good scenario.
But did he react? Do you remember?
Oh yeah, he reacted.
Oh.
You thought the doctor dressed you down.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That would be one of those moments.
Oh yeah. He was angry. So then I decided from then on, I don't need to go to these visitations.
You just stopped. Did your sisters go? Like, you just stopped?
I remember, I think there was just one more after that. And I recall seeing...
It's okay. The dog's playing with his French fry crinkly toy.
We got the dog this new French fry crinkly toy that squeaks as well. So it's, perfect.
Wait. I want to hear this. So your sisters would...
I think it was like the last time he was on a visitation with us, and I saw, you know, there was another strange lady in the car with him, and I was just kind of like, I don't need to be on a date with my dad.
Did
and this
your mom
lady.
Know like that was going on?
She must have. I mean, yeah, we must have spoken to her about these.
Maybe
things.
She just needed a break from you all. Though. Yeah, it was kind of like, definitely. Oh, you she guys deal like, with her.
You guys are out of the house. I don't care.
So that went on for a year. Like, again, if this is an inappropriate question, I've never really asked you this, but in that first year when your parents split, okay, that's weird that your dad's bringing dates and stuff, but what changes in the household?
Oh, relief. I mean, we were just, because my mom and dad fought all the time. And it was just, as kids, we were kind of like, please just get divorced. You guys have to just end this relationship. So when it ended, it was just finally like, oh, there's no shouting in the house. This is wonderful. Except then my mom was just shouting at us.
Okay. So after he left, he left the country though.
Yeah, he stayed in Canada for a bit. And then after that, really like no contact, no letters, nothing. I literally didn't know. I knew where he had gone to, but I didn't know where exactly he lived. There was no contact until I went to university.
Did that have an impact on you as sort of the guy who's supposed to be running the household now?
Oh, I'm sure it did, but you only kind of know your experience. So, you know, if I had another life where I had a dad who was at home, I'm sure I would have been like, hey, I miss having a dad.
Yeah, but you told me yesterday that when your dad left, the only thing he wanted was to take your younger sister with him.
Yes.
Like he wasn't interested in the rest of you?
I thought, wait a minute, why not me? Am I too big to hug anymore? Like, what's going on?
Hug anymore? Did your dad ever hug
you? No,
okay.
Not that I can never recall him giving me a big old hug. Yeah. So that was devastating because we were a very tightly formed unit. So to break up that team would have been devastating. And plus it was also, I don't recall my sister saying it or me saying it to my sisters, but it was also, yeah, I think we were all kind of like, what's wrong with us? Why isn't it? Why wouldn't you petition for us?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, when did you see your dad again?
I didn't see him again until I was in university. And it was just coincidence. I go to university And he was teaching at the university that I was going to. And the only reason I knew that was because my grandmother, my mom's mom, told me my dad was there and had his phone number and said, hey, your dad's in Ottawa, give him a call. So,
but you didn't choose that university because of that?
No, it wasn't like, oh, daddy's there. Yeah. Papa, can you hear me?
Okay, just go on.
Anyway, so I'm at my university first year and I find out where he's teaching and what he's teaching. So I thought, I'll go to his class. So I show up in his class. I think it's been 4 years since we've seen each other. I'm sitting at the back of his class. It's about 100 students. And he's kind of looking at me like, what's going to happen here? And so I just sat there through the class. And then there's an Alp.
Wait. You showed up at your dad's in a lecture class?
Yes.
And just sat there?
Yes.
And he hasn't seen you in?
At least 4 years.
All
at
right.
least.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're, and you're, the reason you're doing this is?
Pull a prank on him.
Okay, let's hear it. Let's hear
so,
it.
So anyway, I'm sitting at the back of his class and he sees me and but he can't say anything because there's about 100 kids there. And so he does a lecture. And then there's an Al Pacino movie. I can't remember the name of it. I can't remember. Anyway, Al Pacino movie where at the end of it, he's a lawyer and his big line is, this court is out of order. You're all out of order. They're all out of order. So the end of the class, dad says, okay, so are there any questions about today's course? So I raise my hand. I'm like, yeah, I have a question.
Oh.
So I raise my question. My dad literally is like, oh, Jesus, what's going to happen? So I make some point about what he was saying, and his dad answers it. And then I come back and I go, you know what? You're out of order. And then I start pointing to the other students, and I'm like, and you're out of order. And this class is out of order. And this whole university is out of order. And then I just threw up my books in the air, and I stomped out of the class.
Oh, PJ.
And everybody was just like, what?
What did your dad
happened?
Do?
My dad was laughing. My dad was literally laughing.
No.
Like, this idiot. And then I came back, and I was like, hey, dad, how's it going? He's like, he was chuckling to himself.
Wait a second. You haven't seen your dad in 4 years and you just walk back in and go, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
Jeez. And he says, fine.
He chuckled. He was like, oh, hi, how are you? I didn't know you were going to this university. So yeah, then he was living there and then...
PJ, I rarely have a loss for words, but I really am trying to visualize this. Two people that are related like that, that don't see each other for 4 years, and that's as intense as it gets. Hey, how you doing?
Pretty much. Yeah. What are you going to do?
I don't know.
To get angry? What are you going to cry, hug? Nah, no,
were you not
it.
A little bit annoyed at the fact that he left?
No, because once again, like, we had my grandparents who were awesome.
He put his hand on your shoulder and said, you're the man of the house? And you're not like... Dad, that was a lot. Or,
no.
Hey, where have you been the last 4 years? It would have been nice to hear from you as a male to male.
No.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
We didn't have like a normal sort of father-son relationship. So it was just kind of like two people who knew each other quite well, who were pretty good friends. And that's kind of the way our relationship was. Sometimes we'd be in contact for regular time periods and then other times not in contact for years and years and years. That's our relationship. As you know.
Do you not think you carry any baggage from that?
Of course I do.
Okay. Well, at least you're admitting that.
I shove it deep down inside.
Yeah,
and I put a pizza on top of it and then fries and a burger.
Well, we'll see what happens because in this diary episode, however far you have stuffed it down, it does resurface. And it's, you know, we at this point have been together on and off for about 6 years. And I remember when we first met and it was very intense between us. And there is something that happens where it's all related to your dad.
Okay, I'm a little hesitant to read this because I think it's going to show me having emotions.
Well, I have to give you credit, PJ, because I did say to you, we don't have to talk about your dad and we don't have to go to this diary entry. It just happens that it follows into this the subject of, you know, Steve Martin and his dad and that. And PJ hasn't read this.
I have not read it, but I will say this. When we both agreed to do this podcast, I wanted only two things. Number one, for it to be enjoyable, which it always has been. Number two, I also wanted to be authentic. So this is the authentic part.
Yeah, you said that. You did say that last episode. And sometimes it's really hard to, because the diary entries do bring up things that, you know, we shove down into other parts of our bodies.
Yep. Okay, so this is May 15th, 1996. Was supposed to meet up with PJ at the Horseshoe. Horseshoe's a nightclub in Toronto. Great music venue. Anyway, I was supposed to meet up with PJ at the Horseshoe, but he didn't feel up to being in a loud environment. So as usual, we had the runaround conversation and can't meet up for essentially another 2 weeks. Regardless of how much time passes between our contact, it's always the same story. It's so worn out that it's time to call it finite. It's the only answer. Although I've said this how many times in the past 6 years? He called me 3 times last week at home and at work. I haven't seen him since December. And I've been avoiding him exactly for this reason. If he really wanted to see me as planned at the Horseshoe tonight, he wouldn't give me the runaround. I remember once when we first started dating 6 years ago, we were spending time together when he got a little freaked out and wanted to suddenly leave. I can't understand why I got freaked out. Did I see a spider? He ended up calling his mom. She told him exactly why he was reacting the way he was and told him to stay and talk it out. Ooh, that would be hard for me. Which, as the story goes, he did. Oh, God, I can see the sentence ahead of me. Oh, man.
Gotta read it, PJ. Authentic.
And he ended up bawling his eyes out. Oh, God, that's so hard for me to admit. All right.
That feels good, doesn't it?
Oh, boy. Authenticity. And he was upset for hours as he relayed the story and the hurt he had from his father. When I think of who PJ really is, that's it. This vulnerable guy, burned and scarred from his dad. I wouldn't go that far.
Oh, I would, and I wrote it down, PJ, so. Ugh,
boy. Burned and scarred from his dad, not having a clue that not dealing with these issues would ever affect him like this. I would agree with that. But, you know, everybody has some mom and dad issues.
But we can only hold things in for so long.
Yep, you are correct.
Right.
Yep. Anyway, considering I always listened to him and supported him, in turn, look how he's handled me. It's no wonder. I'm paranoid. Even if we tried again, I know without a doubt that within a month, he wouldn't be able to handle me. I still can't handle you.
Nope.
And I would be the one who ends up hurt and feeling physically ill from even trying. That is true at that time. Yet he is the only male in my life, no matter how remote, so I can't tell him to get lost. I detest the cycles when I'm fine and strong, and then it plummets into these moments when I'm exhausted and emotionally needy, and PJ is like a hangover that won't disappear with an aspirin. How can I un-ingrain him from my head?
Yep. That's still a question I ask myself, PJ.
Boy.
Well, good for you for reading that. Yeah, it wasn't as bad as you thought. You bawled your eyes out like a baby.
So what I've learned from this is that it's easier for me to try and tell jokes in front of strangers than it is to hug my dad.
Thanks for listening to Nancy and PJ Finally Get Together. Remember to subscribe to our podcast and share the link with friends. Did you know this podcast is an offshoot of our manuscript, You, Me, and France? To learn more about our publishing ambitions, go to nancyandpj.com. In our next episode, Nancy's bored with work and decides to look for a new job. Should she stay near PJ or leave Toronto again?